Good morning, everybody. Okay, this morning's topic is Graf Shelrei, which is a interesting topic because I find personally that it's hard to define and to give clear guidelines. I'm going to try as best as I can. It's a heter, which people like to rely on. And the question is, when can you, when can't you? Literally translated, a Graf Shelrei is a bedpan, and because that is the prototype example of something which should be mukta because of the fact that it is mous, it is disgusting, and on the other hand, everybody is grossed out by it, everybody considers it ga'al, awful, and therefore they want to remove it from their presence. But it becomes the go-to name for this heter of moving something because of the, removing something because of the fact that it's awful. So a Graf Shelrei in the sense of what we're talking about, what's mutter to, what we're going to give a heter to move on Shabbos, something that's mukta, but yet it is also something which is, it brings up a feeling of disgust. It's horrible and dirty and brings up a feeling of disgust. And the example given, the simple, is excrement, something which has excrement, excrement itself, or something which has it in it. Refuse, rubbish, dirt, bones, fields, a dead creature. The example given halacha is a mouse or a cat, but for some it might even be a cockroach, or anything dirty, yachi, excuse my great English, which is found on Shabbos in a place where it disturbs people to be left there. Then such an object, even though in and of itself it is mukta, but because of the disgust that it brings up in us, you know, it's revolting, so then we may remove it from our presence and clear out the area where we are. What's interesting is the general halacha seems to say that it needs to be, we'll talk about more soon. Okay, we'll get to the exact, essentially a place where it disturbs. Let's call it that, and we'll define that soon in more definite terms. So you have cases that are brought down, which it doesn't have to be something as disgusting as a dead rodent. It could be something as, not as disgusting, but something like a empty pot. You have a pot where you've eaten out, you've served out the contents, and now you're left with a pot with leftover the bits of little bit of food that are stuck to the side of the pot and it's left over. That is not nice. Does it bring up a feeling of disgust that makes you throw up? No. But it's not nice, and also depends on the circumstance. A pot which has leftover food in it and it's lying on the counter in the kitchen will be a lot less disturbing to you than if it was sitting on the table. At your Shabbos table, you want your Shabbos table to look beautiful, and to have, you brought a pot to the table and you serve the food, and now you leave the pot lying because you say mukta, you can see more the idea that there would be a graf shelrei. Therefore, a pot, as we have said, is a klisha melacha le'isur by definition. It is made for cooking in, which is also on Shabbos, and therefore a pot is mukta. You're allowed to move it, obviously, to a gufa makoimoi, but by definition, it's a klisha melacha le'isur. So long as it has food inside, so it's toppled to the food inside, and therefore you can carry it around without a problem. Once it's been emptied and there's no more food to take out of it, now it reverts back to its status of being a klisha melacha le'isur. So if it's sitting in a place where you don't need that space, it could just stay there, but it's disturbing you, so then we need a new heter in order to remove it. So you put it in the middle of the table where you don't need that space. Everybody's sitting on the edges and you're placed in the middle of the table, but have this pot that has leftovers in it, not really leftovers, but just the residue of the original food inside it, just the burn parts or something like that. And you want to take it off, so then you have a heter of Graf Shelrei that you can take it off. And as usual, as we've said before, when you pick up mukta, the derech heter, in a way that is permitted to pick it up, not that you picked it up by mistake or something like that, but rather you have a heter to pick it up. So long as it's in your hand, you can do what you like. Like we said, the hammer that you use to open up the nuts, once you're still holding the hammer, you can go put the hammer back in its place. You don't have to drop it where you used it. When you finished using it, you can return it. So to the pot, once you pick it up and take it off the table, you can carry it all the way to the kitchen, all the way to the sink and put it in. You don't have to drop it at the first opportunity once you've left the room. That's not necessary. You can take it back to its place. Not only that, Rav Novit adds, there's a raya for it, that you can actually add water into the pot if, as a result, it's going to stop the remaining food from starting to smell. It's a hot, very chemish day, and the food is that type that will, after a couple of hours exposed to that heat, it's going to go bad and start smelling, and then you're going to have a sink full of stinky dishes. So stink is also something which is in the getter of Grafsha Rei. So to avoid it, you may put water into the pot so that the food won't let off a foul odor and disturb our Onik Shabbos. Obviously, this is only in order to avoid a bad odor, but not because you're thinking if I soak the pot now, it's going to be easy to wash and wait to Shabbos. That's a form of a hon. So you have to know what your intention is. Your intention is to avoid the bad smell, then permit to do so. So the first example we give is a pot. Obviously, there are different pots. I mean, remember in the olden days, they didn't have stainless steel. They had Pyrex. They had cast iron and clay or earthenware vessels, which were a lot more unhygienic than our pots today. And it's much easier to imagine how putting a dirty earthenware pot on the table would be considered something quite gross. But still, we take it that everybody too has to judge for himself what is disturbs him, so that you can take it off the table. A potty, a bedpan, and those type of things are another typical example of something that is a graf sharei and can be removed from where they are when they are after use. A garbage can, a rubbish bin that has refuse inside that is smelling is also considered a graf sharei. A garbage can that is full but has no mess but doesn't give off a foul odor is not automatically called a graf sharei. The heter of emptying a garbage is not so simple. When the garbage is full, especially if it doesn't have a lid and it stinks and it gives off a foul odor and disturbs your Onik Shabbos, so then it is a graf sharei, and now you can take out whatever's inside. It doesn't make a difference whether it's diapers inside or whether it's plastic dishes or whatever he has inside. That's irrelevant. If it stinks, you can take it out and throw it out into the garbage downstairs without a problem. But if it is just full of, let's say, plastic dishes that don't smell, but it's full, and now it's full to the top and it starts overflowing. So now it's a separate problem, is where am I going to throw out the next bit of garbage? You're having several brachas in the house and the garbage can is full and there's still another two courses to empty off the table. What are you going to do with it? So it's not so partial that you can empty out the garbage in order to allow yourself to put a new bag in and collect the new garbage. You can close the garbage, put the lid on, and it doesn't bother you where it is. So you have a separate issue that where am I going to throw out the next garbage? So take a new bag, throw it into the new bag. In the new bag, you have to deal with it. Where am I going to put it? What's it going to be like? Is it graf sharei? Is it stink or not stink? So here we use a different swara, and we say that if you only have one garbage, you don't have more place to throw it out. So what are you going to do? Now the dirt is going to pile up next to the garbage. So then it's a question of Moshum Kvod Habris. Not so much as graf sharei, because it doesn't qualify as a graf sharei in that sense, but it's Kvod Habris if you're not mechuyav to throw your dirty tissues and dirty diapers and dirty dishes onto a pile on the floor and leave them there because you can't use the garbage because the garbage is full. So then there'd be a tzad to say that you can empty out the garbage and then throw out the subsequent garbage back into the bin because the bin has been emptied out, but not because of graf sharei, but they bring it off Kvod Habris. Rav Novit is more makel on it in the Shmini Shabbos Tilchasa, that once the garbage is full and you have no other garbage and you can empty it, Rabbi Karp also brings it down more and says it's mistapik and some people machmir or not. So as I said, to define here exactly where, it's quite difficult, so I'm not going to give exact what can you, can't you do. I think a person needs to take his own personal preference into account with how much it disturbs them. Now interesting, the actual garbage itself, the garbage can, what is the din of the garbage can? Is that something considered disgusting or is that considered clean? And so we say that, or for that matter, a bedpan or a potty, it all depends on what material it's made of. If it's made of, in a loch it's brought down, it's made of metal or glass or it's enamel, something like that, it cleans well. After it's been used, it can be rinsed out and washed. that in our, there's not something discussed. It has a certain amount of revolt just because of what, because we associate it with a certain use. A washed out garbage can is not something where you're going to use as a food bowl. That's just not how we do things, because we are, if you washed out your garbage can with bleach and you sent it to a lab and they prove to you that there's not a trace of bacteria or yeast or dirt or anything on it, and it's not going to affect your fruit in any way, and it's not going to make your fruit inedible. Nevertheless, as human beings, we have associations, and we're not going to do such. But does that make your garbage mukta? And the answer is no. Your garbage, as long as it's clean, as long as it's made of that material that doesn't absorb and it is clean, particularly if today where most people use bin liners, use bags to put inside your garbage, so when the garbage doesn't have the bag inside, essentially it's not a very dirty item. Sometimes the garbage leaks and leaves behind puddles at the bottom which stink. So then yes, then it will be something disgusting. But after it's been cleaned, it's clean. So we're going to say that all these items, if they are clean, they are not mukta. I mean, if you have an empty garbage bin, a garbage can, a rubbish bin, or something like that, a waste paper basket, to call it another name, which also would make a difference. I'm just thinking the difference between the garbage that one keeps in the kitchen, which you're throwing away a lot of food waste, which if they leak out of the bag, they're going to go foul and rot and leave a smell, whereas the garbage that you would have in a different part of the house, where most of the refuse thrown out there would be paper and tissues. Don't know what else the kids put in there, the wrappers. If the halavai, they put all the wrappers and the candies in there. Those garbages are not really disgusting. So if they're empty, they're not mukta. But a garbage can that always has a odor that sticks to it, then that type would be mukta in and of itself, even if it's empty. And the example they bring in halacha is a wooden garbage can, or a wooden bedpan, or if it's made of earthenware, where it absorbs. And therefore, even after it's been washed properly, it still has disgust to it, and therefore it's disgusting. And therefore, our meals, it is mukta, which even though we don't paskin mukta machmas meals, we do not say that meal is a reason to say something is mukta, but when it is really disgusting, we do say it. And therefore, what is the nachdamin al halacha? So first of all, as we said, an empty garbage can, if it's clean, can be moved around without a problem. Once you've thrown something in, then we have to leave it in its place. But it's more than that, is that if you have a garbage can or a potty or something like that, which has disgusting something inside it, and you now go empty it out. So if it was a potty and you've emptied it into the toilet, in the olden days, the halavai, they had indoor plumbing, you took the potty and you took it out to the place where everybody dumped it, to the ashpa. Now the question is, can you bring it back home again? After you've emptied it, can you bring it back to its place? And so we're going to say that if it's clean, you emptied it out, you washed it out, and now it's clean, it's made of metal, it's nice and clean one, so then you can bring it back because it's not mukta. But if it's that type that in and of itself it's mukta, then even so, they've got a heter to carry it out while it was filled with filth, because you have a heter of grasheray. But once you poured the filth out and rinsed it off, then who says you can bring it back in again? So if it is still in your hand, so then we say this is the type of mukta that you picked up a heter. So as long as you didn't put it down, you can put it back in its place. But if you did put it down, so now you can't bring it back in the house again. So one way to do it is to put water inside it, and then you can carry it because it's got water. Now, obviously, it's not just posh. What does it mean, put water inside? Because water is something you can drink. No one's going to drink water out of something disgusting like that. So we say that if it's water that an animal would drink, which is possible, then that water is not mukta, and then you can carry the container, the disgusting container, because of the animal drinkable water that's inside it. But otherwise, one has to, if you took your disgusting clea with something inside and you took it out to the local dumping ground where they dump the excrement, and now you put it down, you can't pick it up and bring it home again. There is a heter if you leave it in place of market stolen, or if you know that it needs to be used. This is how they lived in those days. They needed their pans brought back into the house for future use. But preferably you should do it in a way, either don't put it down or put water inside, but if not, you allow him to bring it back for future. Okay, so that is the definition of the item itself, whether it's considered Grav Sharei, we gave the extreme examples of refuse and excrement, but we also said that pots and full rubbish cans might be in the category of Grav Sharei, which would allow a person to Shabbos. Now we want to talk about the place. Not everywhere does it get a heter of Grav Sharei. The Pashtus and Halacha is brought down a place where people sit or spend time, and then they also bring a place where there is a regular flow of foot traffic, which is an interesting definition and where how to define it. The Mishnah Berurah brings, I can't remember where he probably brings it, but the Mishnah Berurah brings that even a passageway outside your house, between two houses, if there's a regular traffic, then it would be a place that we might get the getter that's Grav Sharei disturbed the people going by. Because there's an interesting halacha, they had outdoor areas which had different definitions. There's a place called a chotzer, which we would translate as a courtyard, and there's a place called Muktzeh She'acharei HaBokeh, which I don't know how to translate, but we'll explain what it is. A courtyard was usually an area where you crossed this area in order to get to your house. When you needed to get to your house from the street, you went into the courtyard, you went through the courtyard and got to your house. But also, a courtyard was an extension to your house. It was where many activities of your house were done. Homes in those days were not as large as homes today. The home was essentially used for sleeping, maybe eating, but most of the activities were done outdoors. And therefore, the oven, the cooking, the laundry were all done outdoors in the yard. You didn't have a laundry room or a kitchen. It was very often done outside. And therefore, the yard was a place of a lot of activity. It was almost an extension to your home. And it has many ramifications in the halacha as to what the yard is considered as. Legabe, for example, what you can carry on Shabbos, halachas tznius, what the getter of a yard is. You have legabe hilchos mezuzah, legabe hilchos Chanukah, hilchos eruvin. There's many, many cases that are affected by the definition of the yard, and Chazon Ish is the famous posuk who holds that we don't have yards today. We don't have the din of the classic chotzer because our outdoor areas are not used in the way that we used in the olden days. Our yards are either for recreation or purely just as a buffer zone between our house and the street and cross through it, but we don't use them. And if we're using them, we're using them for recreation. The kids play there and we don't do regular household activities. And therefore, according to the Chazon Ish, such a place would be part of the mezuzah, but others would be higher than mezuzah. It's very complex. It's a complex discussion. But a yard, at least from the point of view of a Grav Sharei, we will say that since there's regular foot traffic that goes through it, or people spend time there, then it's considered if there was something disgusting there, so that place is something that disturbs you enough that you get the head of Grav Sharei to remove it from such a place. But there's another case brought down, a Muktzeh She'acharei HaBokeh, is again an outdoor area, but it was not used on a regular basis. It was more of a storage area. And, you know, the old strollers, the broken wagons, the extra wood from your sukkah, and who knows what people collected. And you put it at the back. So how often did you go out? And discuss in halacha, if you have such an area and it has a gate, and the gate breaks, can you put the gate back into the hinge of the Shabbos? So it could be there's a problem of a permanent structure, because when you put the gate back on, this gate's not going to be used for the next 6 months or whatever. So we discussed over there the halacha as to how often is this entrance used. If it's not used every 30 days, so then it could be it's got a din of permanence. So you see, a Muktzeh She'acharei HaBokeh doesn't have regular traffic. So the halacha brings down that if a child is playing in this area, this behind your house area that you don't use as regular foot traffic, the kids are playing there and there's something disgusting, you don't have a head of Grav Sharei to pick it up and carry it away, but rather what you do is you can take a different kli and cover up the dirt. So interesting, you see over there that even though the kids are playing there, that doesn't get a head of Grav Sharei. Now how does this fit in? Therefore, it's the way I saw is essentially the areas of your house where you sleep, where you sit, spend time in. Then if you have something disgusting in that area, then you get this definition of a Grav Sharei. But areas of the house where you don't spend much time, just go through. A typical example in our Israeli apartments would be something like a Mipitz Shirut, where you go in to do the laundry and that's about it. And you're not going through there to any place. It's just a non-frequented area. I mean, in a Jewish home with lots of kids, laundry means multiple loads of laundry a week, or I should say a day, and you're going in and out of there, and in and out of there, but it's not exactly considered a place of frequent, that you frequent it. You actually, you know, you got a phone call and you wanted a good place to sit down and schmooze, you're not going to take a chair and sit down and wash, even though you spent half your day there loading that machine and unloading. So it could be that a mepesed shirut, if it has something disgusting there, you don't have the heter of graf sharei to remove it. Also, it makes a difference if you find something outside in a more public area, so you also don't have much of a heter of graf sharei. If there's frequent traffic, so then it will depend on the situation. If you're afraid that someone will step in it, now you can move it out the side, so then taka, you can move it, so people won't step in. But if it's just something that is unsightly, people don't want to see it, then that's not a reason to move it in Shabbos. An interesting example of a graf sharei, I don't know how practical it is amongst us, but there are still people today who use these things, will be a paraffin lamp. Neft, there is quite a horrible smelling fuel, and I remember the Shiva Bachar going to some of Shabbos. They didn't want to use electricity on Shabbos, and there was no generator available, and therefore all the light in the house came from paraffin lamps, and the house had a very strong paraffin smell. So once the light's gone out, now you want to take the lamp out of the room so that the smell goes, so that will be mutter, because this is gives off a awful smell. Also, if you have a graf sharei, you have something disgusting, and you want to cover the something disgusting, you're not carrying it away, but you're covering it. So whatever you take to cover it should be something which itself is, you're allowed to move it. You can't go take another clean mukzah, even though graf sharei generally is a heter to move mukzah, it's just a heter to move itself, but not move something else for it. Therefore, if you have something dirty on the floor and you want to cover it, see if it's, whatever you use to bring to cover it should be something which is not mukzah. There are those who say that even though you can move a graf sharei, if you have a way of doing it which is less direct, then you should try, and therefore if you can do it tilt from the left side, you can carry it by something else, or you sweep it out and picking it up, that would be recommended, as well as if you have a goy available, it's better to tell a goy to carry it out yourself. If you have dirt on a chair or seat or something like that, and you want to sit down, then this is not considered as moving mukta, the mud or whatever stains you have on the seat can be wiped off, and that's not considered mukta at all. Another halacha that has to do with graf sharei is ein oisin graf sharei l'machila. You may not put yourself into a situation where graf sharei will be created with the intention of creating a graf sharei, so that once it turns into a graf sharei, you can then remove it. Obviously, if something's going to happen, it's going to happen, and you don't have to go to all lengths in the world to avoid something happening. But to do it in a way that you want it to be a graf sharei, that would be awesome. So for example, what's brought on halacha, if someone has a leak and he has water dripping in, and it is making his floor, which in the old days was muddy, so it's making his floor muddy. So what he wants to do, he wants to put a bowl underneath to catch the leak and then pour it out. Now, to put a bowl underneath, as we spoke about last week, is a problem of mabakakimechama. You can't take a non-mukta item and let catch in mukta, and now you can't move it for the whole of Shabbos. It's as if you're destroying that kli. And if this liquid that's dripping into your house is disgusting, so then it's mukta liquid, it's water, and therefore you can't put a bowl underneath to catch the dirt. So what do? You bring your bed and you put it next to the drip. So in such a case, that is creating a graf sharei l'chatchila. You're creating now the space to be something where you sit, sleep, or spend a lot of time. Normally, this is not a place in the house where you would spend a lot of time, and if you wouldn't have the heter, now you move your main usage into this area so that you can put a bowl there to catch the drip. That would be creating a graf sharei l'chatchila. However, b'makom pseda, if there would be monetary loss involved, then you could do. Okay, so we have a few more minutes. So that's basically the gedarim of graf sharei. Again, it's got to be something that disgusts one in a place where there is frequent use, and it happens by itself. It's not that you don't to do it. A couple of other halachas that we can see if we can catch in is something which different people have different attitudes to, depends on the owner. And therefore, an example given is a small piece of material which a rich man throws out and a poor man keeps because he wants to use it to wipe up something. Therefore, you have such an item where depending on a person's behavior of what he treats these small items. What is the din of such a state? What is the din of such an item? So we say that generally speaking, in a rich man's house, anything which the rich man considers as garbage to be thrown out is muqsa. So if he has something which after it's used once, he throws it out, but there's a poor person in his house who uses it 10 times before he throws it out, you go according to the Balabais. The Balabais here is the rich man, therefore by him it's considered as refuse, as garbage, it's out, it is muqsa. And even though there's a poor man who in his house would use it, it is considered as still muqsa, doesn't help. Whereas the converse also applies, and that means in the poor man's house, such an item would be not muqtah. However, a visiting rich man may not have to consider such an item to be muqtah, unless he is one of the B'nai Bais. He is a part of the household members. Therefore, on a more practical note, not rich and poor, but you have parents who are less particular about certain things, and you have teenagers who are very particular about things. So if the parents are less particular, and therefore the status of this item is not muqtah, so just because you have a very fussy teenager doesn't mean that for the teenager it's now muqtah, because they usually consider it as part of the household members. Something which is also to use, but only also to one person, for example, a person made a nadir against such a thing, does not become muqtah, because since it is usable for the rest of the world, so therefore his personal subjective status towards this item doesn't create a status of muqtah on this item. Now, one more thing on that thing, if you can get it before it cuts out on me, and that is that if you have dishes that are generally thrown out, but there's still little bits of food stuck to the dish, that doesn't make it not muqtah anymore. Once it's reached that stage where an average person discards it, so then it's considered as no longer having a use anymore, and now once you considered discarded, then it gets the status of muqtah, so disposable dishes thrown out will become muqtah once you throw them out. Okay, and that takes us to the end of that. Hopefully, I think we've now completed here with muqtah, and next week we'll start something new, and we wish everybody a wonderful week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.